Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, January 10th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I see the chat room is slow to fill up today, but it is Thursday. It's a little gloomy here in South Georgia. No rain, just been overcast the last few days. But yesterday for me was very, very productive, finally getting back to kind of normal here. Just still eating some soup, not just liquids, but eating some soup and maybe a sandwich, but nothing real heavy or spicy yet. So just taking it easy, getting back in the groove here from all the illnesses we had over the Christmas and holiday and New Year break. But yesterday was very productive. I got some work done outside down at her mama's house behind us and that I needed to get done, and some work around here at the homestead that was eating away at me. I like to garden, obviously, like to farm, things like that. I got four hanging baskets, you know, the kind that have the moss liner and on the front, hanging on the front porch along the road. And of course, we were gone for about 21 days, maybe a little longer. So I had to get out there and deadhead those pansies, which I love, a solid yellow. You know, there's so many different patterns of those. But had to deadhead those, give them a little bit of water. They got neglected for the last 3 weeks. Got those back in tip-top shape, and I got some things done, again, around the house. A little rake in, used the blower a little bit along the sidewalk, things like that. Got some Christmas decorations down. Some wreaths, because, you know, we were gone until, I guess, Saturday, the, holy cow, the 5th, we actually rolled back into town. So my grandma always used to say, if the Christmas decorations aren't down by New Year's Day, then you're going to have bad luck all year long. So that's kind of, I guess, one of those old Southern wives' tales. I don't know, maybe up north as well. But, hey, but last year, I don't think we got them down because we were traveling. And this year, of course, I knew we wouldn't. But and we don't go all out. I like to see that, but just a little farmhouse, just a little, you know, just a little bit of a class, I guess. We have non-lighted wreaths with a simple red bow on them on the windows and on the front door, and then on the front gate door along or the front gate where you come in, and then a bow, I think, every other post along the road. And hey, little man, what you doing? It's my co-host today, little Caleb. The monster truck fanatic. Yeah, is that funny? You're the man. Who's daddy's boy? You're daddy's boy. That's right. When I say that, he points to himself. Who's daddy's boy? And he points right to him. So gotta love it. He is the joy of my life. So yesterday, boy, I sat down yesterday evening, and I was like, you know, this was a great day. I got a lot done. I got started with the tractor supply videos we'll be doing here in the next 10, 12 days, going through the scripts and seeing what I've already got posted there at Tractor Supply so we don't copy and redo those. So, but yesterday was a good day. Wow, they're already talking about Valentine's Day in the in the chat room. You know, yeah, about September they start celebrating Christmas. And then Valentine's, I did see, I guess I was at CVS and already saw Valentine's stuff out. And you know, how many people say, really, every day should be Valentine's Day for your lover, your wife, you know? I mean, come on. So gotta love that. Every day should be Valentine's Day. I know we've got those ups and downs, but every day really should be Valentine's Day. Should it not? You know, why don't we just have, just like Mother's Day? Every day should be Mother's Day. Lost mine 3 years ago, and I don't think a day goes by that I don't think about her, just like I'm sure if you've lost a parent, you're in the same boat there as well. So one of those things. But we got a great show lined up for all of you today, listeners and the archive listeners that listen when they can. We've got the first show of the year with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. He'll be joining us today, and we'll be talking about controlling wildlife damage. And so I know myself, for one, that was something that I really had to concentrate on back in college when we threw a party. But now I think that we're talking about a different type of wildlife damage. So not necessarily talking about, pardon me, throwing parties in college. So a different type of wildlife damage. And I'll be honest, I'm not exactly sure where this topic is going to take us if we're talking about predator damage or, you know, squirrel damage getting up under the eaves of the house, things like that. But we will definitely see here when we're joined by Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. So, and I also have a special surprise as well regarding the Backyard Back Home Magazine this year, as Richard will join us on the second and fourth Thursday of every single month. And I've already got the next 2 months, this month and next month, the next four shows of topics, and they're great. He comes on, he talks about homesteading. You know, oh my gosh, the topics he's had in the past, cooking with cast iron, geothermal heating, old-timey techniques to preserve apples. I mean, anything and everything about homesteading, back to the earth, living. It's awesome. You hear it right here, second and fourth Thursday of every month here with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. I see that we have Poet's Wife in the chat room today. We missed you yesterday, Poet's Wife, and it looks like I love having a big fan base in a particular town that I happen to love as well, because me and Jen love Nashville. It was a tough decision, because I do love all my fans in Nashville, and we chose to get together when we were up there visiting Tractor Supply and having meetings on a Tuesday evening, and that just so happens to be Tuesday night, the Grand Ole Opry. And so I was sitting here thinking, okay, I'd really love to see Poet's Wife and Alice and everybody that we love up there, but I sure would love to go to the Grand Ole Opry with Caleb again, too. But we said, you know, no, it'll be a long day of meetings. I'll probably fall asleep during the Opry anyway. So we'll just we'll go and meet some friends and get uplifted and have a great time, break bread together before we head back to the homestead. So we did that. But my point here, Poet's Wife, is that there may be another trip to Nashville in my very near future. If you remember Poet's Wife last year, we did an event there at the co-op, where we did the radio show and then the workshop and then the book signing and the Q&A and that type of thing. I heard from Scott, the manager of the co-op, yesterday, and he's invited me back up to do an event there. And he gave me a tentative date, what he's looking for. I may move it up a week. We're not doing anything in March. Okay, once March 1st hits, based on Jen's due date being March 22nd, and the fact that Caleb came 3 weeks early, we no travel in March. So that's off limits. So we'll continue on the on radio show and doing articles for TSC and things like that. But I think he requested Poet's Wife that I come up there for an event on February the 20th. I think he said the 26th. He means looking at the wrong calendar. Maybe he was looking at January 26th, but I think he meant maybe February 23rd. We might make that actually work. So we'll just have to see, but I'll definitely let you know based on coming back up to Nashville. So, and I thought about it. I'm like, okay, Nashville, I can probably get home. Of course, we're traveling with the travel trailer, so I can't go as fast as I normally go, making sure I keep my family safe. But it'll take me a little bit longer to get home, because if y'all remember, our longtime listeners, we were down here at the homestead 19 months ago when Jen's water broke, and it was like 3 a.m. And our hospital, we had not moved down here full time. We were still living in Atlanta at our home up there. But we were down here getting ready because we were moving right after Caleb was going to be born. So we thought we still had 3-4 weeks to continue working down here on the house, doing some renovations. Well, nope, Caleb had different ideas. So her water broke down here about 3:30 a.m. You know, what are you going to do? Our hospital's 3 hours away. So we loaded up the car, what we needed anyway. Got the two dogs in the back of the SUV. We loaded up. And we started heading north, and we made actually it was about 2 hours and 40 minutes because there was no traffic, 2 hours and 40 minutes. We got back to the exit to where we get off for to go home or the hospital, and I told Jen, I said, well, do we turn right and go home and then drop the dogs off, or do we just head on over to the hospital and welcome Caleb? She says, I think I'm doing pretty good. So ladies, an all new respect for my lovely wife. Water breaks at 3:30 a.m. We load up the car, and we make a 3-hour drive all the way back to the hospital, and no problems. We get in, they do all the typical tests they have to do, and then they wheel her in, and they do the C-section because he was breech. Yes, we were planning on an all-natural water birth with Caleb, but he had definitely different ideas. Yep, so again, more respect for my wife, all-natural water birth, doing the hypnosis type of birth, water birth. But again, Caleb had different plans. There was one doctor that we were recommended, pardon me, that in the Atlanta area that still did all-natural breech births. But Jen just wasn't real comfortable with that, didn't want to take the risk. So, hey, you know, you did what you had to do. So she had her C-section. So I don't know if we could make it from Nashville back to down here for water broke or not. I don't think I'd want to take that chance, but we'll just have to see. So maybe coming back up to Nashville, Poet's Wife, for an event up there, and I think it was February, but we'll just have to see based on how she's feeling and her. We don't want to cut it too close, so not a worry there at all. So thank you very much for joining us today. Again, it's a great show. It's our first show of the year with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, and I see he has called in now into the caller queue. So we're going to take a really short break, and then when we come back, we'll get started with Controlling Wildlife Damage with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Stay with us. We'll be back after this short break. No matter how much we pamper our chickens, no matter how often we clean our coops, there is always that chance they will get mites and lice. If they do, you want to treat them as naturally as possible. Poultry Protector from Carefree Enzymes uses all-natural enzymes to eliminate the mites and lice from your coop, nesting boxes, and chickens with no egg withdrawal period. My chickens don't always have mites and lice, but when they do, I prefer Poultry Protector from CarefreeEnzymes.com. Happy flocking, my friends.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Ah!
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, and it's my pleasure to welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, for the first show of 2013. Welcome, Richard.
Oh, thank you, Andy. I'm glad to be back here, and it's a great start to the year.
Yeah, hopefully you had a great Christmas holiday and New Year with family and friends up there in North Carolina.
Yeah, we had a good time. It's mild weather now, and I hope we get some colder weather, even though we complain about it.
I know we really need it down here too. My understanding is that if our peaches don't get so many days of below freezing temperature, that the crop is just not near as good. And I'm sure that probably goes with a lot of other things. And I think this week we may hit 77. I was looking at the Weather Channel online, and it was 77 one day this week here in South Georgia, mid-January. I said, this is crazy. I saw a report yesterday, I don't know if it was on CNN or local Atlanta News online, where 2012 was the hottest year as far as temperatures, not like record heat, 105, but just on average for the year, the warmest year, I think, in history, maybe for Georgia or Atlanta, 2012 was. So just not as far as, again, 110 degree days in the summer, but just overall averages across for the entire year. But here it is mid-January, and it's 77, and I do worry about how that affects, again, the agriculture down here, pecans. I don't know if pecans need to have so many days of below freezing weather. I hear it a lot about the peaches needing so many days of below freezing or frosts to really make those peak for this next year. So it's a little concerning, especially to all the people who make a living down here and feed their family and send their kids to college with agriculture. But even up there in the mountains, I guess you're experiencing some a warm wave in January, it sounds like.
Yeah, and we have an apple crop too that goes through the same cycle, and there's always concern about a lack of frost days and just the interruption of the regular cycle. And the other thing, we're talking about wildlife damage, and it sort of connects. I just spoke with a pond authority a couple days ago who was offering us an article on maintaining ponds, but he says that that he's getting some interest. His clientele's interested in the effects of warming climate are actually increasing disease vectors like mosquitoes and malaria-related things and all that. I mean, in areas that never would have seen that are now experiencing or have a risk of experiencing mosquito-bred diseases that wouldn't occur if it had been cold enough to kill the eggs and all that kind of thing. And I see the same thing here with the ticks and things in the ground like that, where we have guineas to control some of that, but it's just a whole new world now with these fleas and ticks and things. In the winter they never used to be a problem, and now they can be, you have to sort of watch it.
I was thinking the same thing as you kind of led into that about the mosquito population with us not getting having a cold winter. Not just that, but I mean everything affecting not just agriculture, but everybody. But I'm thinking like the control of weeds. Once it starts getting warmer, if that would affect the weed seeds and the weed population. I know with the mosquitoes, and I didn't really initially think about ticks and fleas down here. We're below the gnat line, so gnats always seem to be really bad in the summertime here.
and it, I think it alternates years, but I know that that can affect that. So it's interesting. We'll have to watch it, you know. And I know probably just like everything else in America, half our listeners probably are following or really in and believe in global warming, and half think it's a spoof. Whatever your beliefs are, keep on trucking, my friends. But it's you know, I read that yesterday, and I was thinking, warmest year on record, you know, and you know, got things going on, and it's just interesting. So now today's topic, controlling wildlife. When we initially talk about that, and we were talking about it yesterday on the show, and we were posting about it, and I said this morning, I'm like, you know, back 20 years ago, my idea of controlling wildlife was having some security at a college party. Controlling wildlife damage. But now that I'm 43, we're talking about a different controlling wildlife damage, not necessarily security for a party. But on a serious note, you know, that we were talking yesterday, I was like, okay, could this be not necessarily predators for our livestock, but wildlife damage, meaning damage for squirrels getting up in our attic, damage from the damage that, say, armadillos can do to your garden, rooting things up, wildlife damage from wild hogs out in your garden and maybe destroying part of your smokehouse building or things like that. So I'm anxious to hear exactly where the topic is going to lead us today.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, some of it is predator related, you know, talking about you know, damage to chickens or livestock or whatever. But in a broader and general sense, and really, what I was going to discuss were you know, were rodents and deer and beavers and squirrels, like you said, possums, and you know, all this kind of thing, and. You know, some of them may be predators, and some of them may be just in your attic or in the crawl space or wherever. But that just is a big just, you know, there's a lot of potential problems open with these critters getting into the house or into the places you don't want them. And there's also some steps to take that you have to be careful about in taking care of the problem, because you know, not everything is legal or correct or anything else. And I don't mean just politically correct, but you know, there are good reasons why we don't just do certain things to the animals to get rid of them. So, I mean, basically, just get into it. I think most of these animals are going to be more rural settings, but certainly not all of them. In fact, suburban, you know, there's sort of a trend, I guess it's a trend towards giving the impression of living in the country. Developers will build suburban enclaves out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you know, I guess you call it urban sprawl. I guess that's the
right,
bottom
yeah.
line. But when that happens, it also invites these animals to you know, invite themselves into your normally suburban or urban environment. And the second part of that is the more and more of the farmland and rural areas and pastures and fields and, you know, whatever get built on, less and less natural environment the animals have to just do their thing and live normally. And the way things work, it's generally much easier to feed off of out of your garbage cans and out of, you know, your dog food pile or, you know, can or whatever, or any other food source, you know, your chicken house or whatever, than it is to eke it out in the wild. So, you know, it's a combination of both the animal's natural instincts and our being there in the first place. And I don't mean to say that we have no right as humans to be in the forest, but the point is we have initiated the problem by growing into their habitat. So, you know, we have to be prepared to deal with it. And, you know, it didn't just happen. You know, we sort of made it happen. So, you know, that's sort of where it's coming from without getting too,
yeah.
you know, too
well,
politically.
I can remember Jen's parents lived in a house. They've been out in the country. And then all of a sudden urban sprawl came through, and now it's just a mammoth suburb of North Atlanta. And, I mean, the front – road that went in front of their house was dirt. Now it's one of the busiest thoroughfares in North Atlanta, you know, that type of thing. Well, back when, I guess it was probably, I can't even remember, it must have been 15 years ago, they came in and cleared what was a truly all-natural wooded area, several acres, and put in an apartment complex. And all of a sudden, they just never had in their little farmhouse on their property a rodent problem. But they went and cleared this apartment complex. I don't know how many acres of it. Started doing all building and the parking lots, things like that. And next thing you know, all the wildlife, it seemed like from those, 20 acres, all of a sudden went all the way over to my in-laws' property and to try to get some refuge, I guess. So our family has experienced exactly what you're talking about firsthand.
yeah, and it's that, and also just even little things like if you have chickens, for example, maybe never had a problem with any kind of snakes or something like that, but there's a cycle that occurs. I mean, people, I just use chickens as an example. It could be anything with feed. So you have feed out and about that normally wasn't there to begin with. Even if you're careful, I mean, you've got pellets or some type of feed, corn, usually corn-based, you know, something. And so now you have rodents. And the rodents wouldn't have been there. So once you have the rodents, now all of a sudden the snakes want the rodents. So now you've got snakes too. So it's sort of a never-ending battle. And you probably have black snakes where you are, and it's fairly benign, large black snake. I know a lot of people don't like snakes, but the presence of black snakes is often good because at least it's they're predators for other creatures that are a lot worse, and they don't really bite. Well, they do bite, but they're not aggressive, and they certainly don't. They're not poisonous. So, let live and let live. And I never run off a black snake from plenty of copperheads, but not a black snake. We leave them be, because they're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But really the one of the big rodent. Well, they're not all rodents, but one of the big problems, one of the biggest rodent problems is beavers. That's a real destructive creature. They're hard to control because they're really hard workers, and they move around at night. They're nocturnal, so they travel at night, and then with those big teeth of theirs, they can really get into people who have streams or wetlands or creeks and ponds and whatever. You may have a nice stand of trees,
mm-hmm.
Within the next morning or within a day or two, you have these things work in groups, and they work quickly, and they can do a lot of damage in a very short amount of time. And the other part too is that some of these they don't care where the tree falls; they just chew it and it falls, and it could be on your garage or your car or your house or outbuildings or whatever. So you want to think about that and consider that the other part of the thing is once they cut the trees down, they use they build dams. Of course, they're engineering rodents, and they can put up a dam pretty quick. And once the dam's up,
mm-hmm.
it can back up the pond or the creek and start flooding, buildings. You get your ditches flooded. If you've got a farm, you've got roadways flooded, or at least pathways, and bottomland that would normally be relatively safe could be inundated, unplanned inundation, and there's just a lot of damage the beaver can do, it's just a real problem. Let's see. I'll probably go through some of the animals first, and we can talk a little bit about the mitigation or the cure for them. The other thing is groundhogs. They're a real common creature here in the mountains, and they look sort of cute there on the side of the road. They stick their heads up, and when you pass by, they sort of pop up and watch. But they build a serious complex of tunnels and chambers and And I think we discussed this a little bit before in relation to gardens, but you know, aside from the gardens, which can be a real problem in itself, and the destruction they can do to the garden, they also they've also been known to you know, dig tunnels that can break a horse's leg. You can undermine house foundations. They can you know, cattle and other large, especially large livestock, you know, can trip or get stuck in the holes, and you know, they're not obvious. So so it's a real hazard around, you know, around the farm. And in addition to that, they, you know, they'll eat. They love flowers. They love bulbs. They get into your vegetable gardens, and they tend to have a knack for harvesting your produce right before you do. When it's ready and it's not quite ready, and they'll eat it, you know, sooner than later. So so there, that's another common problem. You know, more common for most people than the beavers, because the beavers do have sort of more specific habitat. But the other thing is, I mean, they're all over the place. Is the squirrel, you know, the regular old American mm-hmm. gray squirrel. You know, they tend to make those. You see the nests up in the trees. But they also nest in the any other convenient place. Sometimes they'll pick a place like around the transformers of the phone poles, because it's a little warmer up there, or maybe some of the switch boxes or whatever that, you know, whatever is going on in the you know, they probably don't use switches anymore, but the electrical control boxes that are up on the poles, you'll see sometimes big clumps of nests around that, and your attic is a warm place. A sheltered place, and they can go in and out of there with impunity, because it's up, you know, usually it's a wire or a tree limb that's getting them, you know, getting them in and out. So, you know, there's that too. And, you know, the hazard in the house, of course, is that they, you know, they have, they make a mess. They can, you know, soil the insulation, tear it up, make a physical and health hazard in addition to chewing on wiring or plumbing. And, you know, plastic plumbing, some animals sort of have a taste for it, PVC and that kind of thing. And the insulation on wiring and the rubber or whatever it's made of, the vinyl or something, seems to have a special attraction to them, and they can get through that. And, you know, they may chew a wire where they actually kill themselves. We don't know, but it could in turn cause a fire. We at work, actually, we had back home, right, at our offices here, we had trouble. Just continuing trouble with our cable connection for internet, high-speed internet, and some of the other stuff for the mm-hmm. For the business. And turns out that the squirrels had made a net across the street. The cable goes out the side of the wall and across the street to a pole. And the technician climbed the ladder, and next thing I knew, he was flailing and screaming, and he slid down the ladder and was pointing up to the thing. It apparently opened the big box to look in there, and it was a squirrel's nest. Squirrels had made a habitat right within there. I guess he thought the leaves and the stuff around there was just deposited there like a bird, you know, like a bird had done that or something. But apparently the squirrel ran out and at him, and they had a bunch of other ones in there. So they were just real careful about that, and, you know, knocking them out of there and then cleaning everything up. But lo and behold, I think they rebuilt at least twice more before they finally decided to move on. You know, we had several callbacks, you know, months at a time between. But these things get in there and chew the connections or whatever it is, the wiring or whatever, that just make a mess of the thing. And then, you know, of course, we had no internet for, you know, for half a day until they fixed it. Let's see what else we have. Other common common animals. Oh, the skunks. That's another thing. They are prevalent. They love underneath the house, the crawl spaces, and any other protected spot. And some of these creatures really have an affinity for man-made structures as opposed to natural structures. You know, I guess the warmth, the possibility of water and food nearby, that kind of thing. So possums would be under there, skunks can be under there, and raccoons is another thing. The raccoons have a real penchant for getting, you know, they have really manipulative little front paws, and they can undo latches, or they can just pick away at things and get into spaces. It's not uncommon to have a raccoon crawl up in between the space in between your chimney and your framing of the house from the bottom, and just climb up the outside of the chimney till it can get up into the attic, and then or in the wall, and then just live there. And the problems with that are the fact that you have a moving and living creature going back and forth in your house. You can hear it, and it's most of them are fairly big. But you also they can infest an entire room or even the household with fleas and other mites and critters because they carry them in their fur, and it can be a real problem to get rid of not just the raccoons but the fleas and creatures that they bring with them. So a space like that, as most people probably don't realize, that you can't. The code doesn't allow you to build. Even the old-timey builders didn't always want to knew enough not to put the wood framing of the house right against the stone chimney because of the fire hazard that would involve. If there's a breach in the chimney, especially the older styles where you have mortar that's not really as firm as some of the modern stuff, has to be patched once in a while. Well, that you blow a hole in that with a hot fire, and you have a spout of flame comes out and hits the framing of the house. So what they would do is just pull the framing of the house away from the chimney just a little bit to give a little space up in there to prevent that from happening. And of course that space is a perfect pathway for things like raccoons and possums and whatever to crawl up in there. So that's another kind of a creature. And then we got your birds and bats. Bats can be a real problem. Again, in the house, in the attic, or in the top of the house, especially where you have vents and siding that may have pulled away, and places you may notice that siding has pulled away, or rotted away, or been chipped away, or pecked away, or whatever. You may notice that near the foundation, but you probably won't notice it right away up at the peak of the house, where in the gables, where you don't really always look, or underneath the soffits, where the roof overhang sticks beyond the wall. It's a great place for the birds and bats to nest. And again, the bats can be a problem. They do eat insects and all that, but they can be carriers of disease and birds as well. And you don't necessarily want them living in your attic. And then we've got the other more predatory creatures. I know we hear. In fact, it was just an article in the paper, about a week ago, that it is official that a strong coyote population has established itself in our area here, and it looks like they're not leaving anytime soon. So coyotes can be a real, real issue with anybody with livestock or pets even. Outdoor people are used to having outdoor dogs or outdoor cats. Obviously chickens, poultry, lamb, livestock like lambs and calves or anything small like that. Open game. I mean, just open season on as far as the coyote is concerned. They're very clever and they'll eat anything. So, they're another good example of wildlife that gone awry. And, of course, in their case, they're not just a problem in being around, but they're a problem in being, real active predators. So you certainly don't want them out and about if you raise livestock or chickens or have a fondness for your cats or small dogs. So the deal is, we've come in, we've built a house, we're in their habitat, or we may have been just a sole house or a small farm somewhere on the outskirts of a suburban area and into a good rural forested or open area, and then somebody else developer wise came in and just plopped down 30 or 50 homes in the vicinity. So basically they have driven, what the animals will do is tend to be driven to away from where all the activity is to the most convenient wooded or natural area. And so if somebody, you know, put the subdivision up, and you're the one with, you know, with 15 acres of woods, those animals are going to find their way to your place right away because they, you know, they've basically been driven out of their normal environment. So, you know, as more and more development comes, fewer and fewer places are wooded, but that's all that's left for animals to retreat to. So that's where they're gonna go, and then as we get even denser, of course they're gonna be making their homes, you know, in places that are at convenient forms, like under your house or in your attic or whatever. So the easiest thing, or the best way to look at it is to understand how the, you know, what the individual animals like or how they live or what their habits are. And then the second part of that is to just take care of the problem by shutting off access to, you know, to your attic or your basement or your crawl space or your barn or whatever it is that, you know, that's the problem in cases of animals that move in. You know, somewhere, you know, whether it's the roof, attic area or the crawl space or whatever, somewhere there is an opening, a hole or a crack or something that these critters are getting, you know, getting in. And, you know, a good thorough investigation will, you know, turn up, usually pretty easily turn up what, you know, where the problem is or why, how, where they're getting in. And it's a simple matter then of just making sure they're not in. And that's where it sort of comes back to, if they're nocturnal creatures, the hole would be sealed at night when they're out, or if they're out in the daytime, you know, you would want to seal the home when they're out. You don't really want to lock them in because obviously they could wreak havoc in the insulation or the wiring or just in chewing because they're frantic. The other thing is once they die, you know, it's not a pleasant experience having to deal with either the carcass or putting up with the decaying carcass if you can't find it, which, you know, also could happen. You know, if a raccoon crawled up in your between your joists of the first and second floor and died up there, you know, it'd be an awful experience for the next, you know, the next three months or whatever. So basically, you know, it's openings, it's cracks, it might be a loose board, even some of the, like a raccoon, for example, if it was a piece of siding that could physically be lifted and then would fall back in place, you may not notice that. The raccoon noticed it because the front paws, you know, every time thing happens, you know. But, you know, going around feeling things, if you have to get up on a ladder or hire someone to, you know, get up on the ladder and check out the soffits and the venting, make sure the vents are tightly fixed to the wall in the attic space, the gable vents. Make sure there's screen, if there's screen, or if there isn't, there should be screen, and if there is screen, make sure it's not damaged so that the animal can crawl through there. The other thing is, with tunneling animals, you really have to look around. I know I have a lot of leaf debris and blown stuff around the foundation of the house, and actually in the barn area where I am, I mean, I didn't think about it, especially there's leaves and junk, and I was putting some lumber away and just stacking some lumber, and I happened to lay the end of a 2x4 down, and it went in the ground about a foot and a half, thinking right up next to the foundation. It just went down, and I moved some leaves, and lo and behold, there's a whole tunnel under there, and I bent a piece of long wiring in there, like a piece of a Romex wire, like house wire, and I could reach back, and that thing went back almost 5 feet. It was quite a little nest in there. And they had dug down. I never figured out what it was, but they dug down into the along the foundation until they went under the footer, you know, the part that rests on the ground, and then went back up in there and just built a little nest beneath the slab of the barn. And because this one has a workshop, really, it has a cement floor. So I just shoveled in. You know, a lot of pea gravel, and just kept on shoveling until it filled it up, and then poked it back in there with a stick, and then poured some concrete. And who's to say, you know, they could just go over 4 feet and do it again, but they didn't. But that's the point, is you need to go around checking access places that may not really be that obvious, especially with the burrowing animals, because they could be, you know, they could be going down and coming back up again, and you know, and that could be a problem. And, you know, in this case, it wasn't that big a deal, because it was really just a fairly small hole. But if they had done it, if a number of them had done it in different places, mm-hmm. it put the risk of the foundation actually cracking, collapsing. You know, you certainly don't want that. You know, more so in a home than in a barn. You know, if we can learn, do a little boning up and learn what the habits of the creatures are, what they like to do, what they like to eat, what they're after in the home, beyond just warmth, which, you know, couldn't be enough. But there may be something in the house that they, you know, they're particularly after, like water. Leaky pipes in a crawl space could be a real attractant. Once an animal's made its way into the crawl space, just in patrolling around and seeing what's what, if it discovers access to a, you know, under the sink to a food source, or maybe just a dripping water pipe that's an easy water source for them, instead of walking down to the creek, mm-hmm. which may be half a mile away, whatever. You know, that's the kind of thing that you really have to check out and take care of. You know, fix it up, get it off the table, and you know, basically, if there's nothing to attract them under your house or in your attic or whatever, that's half the battle right there. They don't want to come in if there's nothing particularly to attract them in there, other than shelter. And of course, in that case, again, back to the changing the lock, so to speak. You know, seal off the openings. You know, put up a screen, whatever it takes to get them, you know, get them done. You know, in the case of a beaver, back to beavers again. The standard way of taking care of them is to just put a collar of a heavy, you know, like a heavy welded wire fence, maybe 4 foot high, the kind of stuff you use in livestock. Just make a ring around the tree, not right up close to the bark, but, you know, away from the bark a little bit, and you can get some rebar, you know, construction reinforcing bar, some T-posts, those green fence posts, and just hammer them into the ground. Generally, the posts are a little thicker, and they may do some damage to the roots, but that's why when I usually work around trees, for whatever reason, try to keep the impact down, and rebar, half-inch or 5/8 rebar is a good choice, because it's skinny and strong, and they come in like 10-foot length, so you can cut it to whatever you need. You know, sharpen the point if you have to, but just, you know, cut your maybe a 7-foot length of it, and get up on a stepladder and drive, you know, drive 2 feet in the ground, or if you have a 6-foot length, drive 2 feet in the ground, and the 4 feet left thick enough, and then you can put your 4-foot fencing around the tree, and use the rebar as a place to wire the fence to, or plastic wire tie it, or whatever
that would be what you're describing now would be someone choosing to do that if they truly had a personal issue with eliminating, for lack of a better term, or rehoming or removing the beaver. Because I think about the, you know, you got maybe a beaver pond or a creek or something, and, you know, hiring a wildlife specialist to come solve that problem, whether it be humanely or inhumanely, they are both kinds out there. And I'm just visualize once you see damage to a tree, you do this, because how do you guess which tree to do this to? Or there's an awful lot of trees versus maybe hiring an expert to come in and remove the issue, so you wouldn't have to do all the labor of putting this around select trees, even. Right? Am I going down the wrong path?
No, you're exactly right. That's exactly correct. Once the damage is done, you know, the beaver may come and have cut down several trees or whatever, and you're protecting your remaining trees.
Okay.
This is beyond the trapping or the wildlife expert, mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think just basically the soft approach. You're protecting your trees. You live and let live, and whatever. Now, you bring up a good point, which, you know, I get to is basically taking care of the beavers. It's not just beavers. I mean, it's everything. In most states, well, it's a fairly complicated thing, but in most states, the Wildlife Commission or the people who make the rules about wildlife, you can't just, I'm not saying people don't just, but you're legally not generally allowed to capture an animal and transport it to a different location. People who do that have to be licensed. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that live captured animals that are transported and relocated are a vector for diseases and introduction of diseases and pests like bugs or ticks or mites or other beyond just diseases. It could be insect problems in the animal itself. Parasites is what I'm thinking. And when you're moving, you may be moving an infected animal from an area that is already infected to an area that is not infected, and you're going to infect it. Not just that, but you're risking a rabies infection or introducing a rabies infection to somebody else. You're also, for people concerned, the charitable concern for animals' welfare, whether they're wild or not, when you dump a wild animal who's used to a habitat into a new environment, basically it's inhumane. I mean, the animal mm-hmm. has no established food or water source, no place to live, no nest site, doesn't have any knowledge of the area as far as, predators or who or what. So, essentially people would think it's just a wild animal, but it probably would be far more humane to just get rid of them than to force them to suffer by relocating them. Now, they may well be eliminated very quickly by a predator, but that's not always a guarantee. So, and then beyond, as I said, beyond all that, you also have the risk of the legal aspects of it, because you're not in most cases allowed to just pick an animal up and move it. So what are you supposed to do? Well, I'm not recommending. Some people would, in a rural environment, would just, especially with a coyote or something, would just eliminate it. That's what firearms are for, and it's good reason. And somebody who makes a living off of livestock, lambs, and other defenseless livestock needs to have that option in his or her toolbox, because that's an immediate solution. And that's one thing. Many animals, however, aren't. Coyote basically is a sort of a special case, and there's some other animals like that where the season on them has been adjusted, because they're basically just shoot on sight kind of thing in many areas. Many other animals are not. I mean, there's a very specific hunting quota and season for certain animals. So the idea of just going out and taking care of it that way isn't always. It may be effective, but it's not always legal. So that's one thing. The other thing, which is really more about what we had been talking about in the article and what I'm discussing here, is basically a trapping situation where you have a habahart type trap, a wire cage trap that they come in different sizes, and their habahart is just one name brand. There are many traps that are similar that work in the same way, effectively trap the animal. But the other part of that is trapping. There is a season for trapping, and you have to be aware from your state wildlife authority what you can and cannot do. Now the easiest thing to do there is to contact, even if you don't intend to hire the person, contact a professional trapper just to get an idea of what can and can't be done, what his services will provide, mm-hmm. what they cost, as opposed to you. I mean, I don't think it's unethical to say, I don't know if I need to use your services, but tell me what you do and how much it's going to cost me and what the rules are. And then, usually what happens is people who do that say, oh, I can do that myself. And then maybe they figure they find out they can't do it themselves as easily as they thought, and they end up hiring the guy anyway. So that's the point. I mean, there are people who are licensed and experienced in actually trapping, specifically trapping creatures, and for whatever, for proper relocation or for disposal or whatever. I mean, I have in mind a woman here has quite a bit of acreage near here, and she had a beaver problem. And she had told me, she goes, I really don't want to kill them. They're cute and, you know, I live and let live and all this. And she finally found a way about out in the country. She found a fellow who was a professional trapper and went over to see him. And he said, no. He said, ma'am, he goes, I don't kill them. You know, I trap and then I let them loose in a nice, friendly environment and, you know, all this. Well, looking at his barn and the pelts nailed to his barn, should have been a tip-off. the whole side of the barn was covered with beaver pelts. You would have noticed that. But he indeed did remove the beavers, but I don't think their happy homemate was probably not on this earth when by the time he was finished with them. Trapping is, you know, it's a state-by-state. The wildlife rules are a state-by-state issue, so I would advise people to contact a wildlife. Could be a wildlife control officer. It could be wildlife commission. The state. You know, even if you have to speak to the extension agent in your county about how to get a hold of the proper person at the state level. If that's what it takes, that's fine. But they actually, you know, in our state publishes a nice book. You know, an annual publication of like a little. Well, it's actually a pretty big pamphlet that explains, you know, rules and regulations, the hunting seasons, trapping seasons, and other related things, and it has further information or access to information on what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But the other option, which is, you know, actually you're paying taxes for it, is the state game and wildlife officials can investigate your situation or look into it and issue you a trapper or a pest control specialist who can come and either kill or trap your pest, or they will issue you a temporary or time specific kill permit that authorizes you or the person you hire to legally remove the animal from the situation. You know, that's another option. The only way you're going to find out about that in anyone's particular locale is to, you know, look into it, to ask the state people. And, you know, obviously that's, mm-hmm. you know, takes a little bit of time and whatever, but it's apparently the correct way to do it.
Let me go to a commercial break. When we come back, I've got another question regarding a solution. It may be a simple solution. It may be a solution that, of course, requires some responsibility. So we're talking with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Backcomb Magazine. It's his first show joining us back here in the new year, 2013. We're talking about controlling wildlife damage, and we will return very quickly after this short break.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today, welcoming back Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Backcomb Magazine. If I can push the right button here, there we go. My question for you regarding trying to eliminate some of these issues, which may be a simple solution, but does require responsibility because it is a living being, and that is one or two good. I don't want to say watchdogs, but I guess a couple of good farm dogs would some of the animals we've talked about today may prevent them from coming around. I don't know if you're going to kind of get or lead into that a little bit as we kind of wrap up the show today, but I was going to mention that I know that the dogs we have, the two, can eliminate a lot of predators for our farm animals, but also some of these other wildlife that would want to come around and do damage.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's actually one other thing I was going to bring up, which are essentially ideal because it's actually more of a keeps them away. It's a deterrent as opposed to actually having to deal with them directly. You're basically just forcing the animal to go elsewhere, which may not be great for your neighbors, but I mean that's basically there is a certain range of comfort that, around your own home that you want to maintain. A good guard dog or farm dog, as you said, would be ideal. I mean, we have my neighbor had alpacas, and they're big old white. I forget the name of that breed now. Is it Great Pyrenees, I believe? Just a real good control dog because it barks sort of on a regular schedule, not a constant barking, but sort of a scheduled barking. And it's a very controlled sound, and I think just the presence of that, it's almost like a warning siren. It tells the predators, and especially he's never had a coyote loss of any animal, and I think it just tells the a good dog will tell any predator around, I am here, and you will be out of luck if you approach. And then of course some breeds are trained to either trained to or just naturally will rip a predator apart once it goes beyond a certain line. So that's an ideal situation, an ideal choice for someone who does have the wherewithal, the time for training, and the time to take care of an animal like that. And of course, anybody in the country, lives in the country or more rural area, will most likely have a dog, or might want to think about getting a dog. And that's another area where you really have to do your research, because if you have livestock you're trying to protect or trying to keep predators away for a specific reason, you may want to research what breeds are best suited to that. And of course there are breeds that are just generally good all around dogs, good with the family, good with with predators and just good for guarding and keeping things at bay away, including humans, I'm assuming. The other thing I want to mention real quick before we sign off is that there's a whole other option here with just, I'm not going to call them chemical deterrents because that's essentially what they are, but they're, most of them are natural, some of them aren't, some are synthetic, but it's basically just scent-based deterrents that you can sprinkle, well, some of them's liquid, some of them's powder, whatever, sprinkle around or apply around around the borders of a garden or around your area you want protected, that will just, by their very presence, deter the, animals from, you know, from coming close. And, you know, just like we put coffee grounds out so the ants don't, borax or something, so ants don't come in. A lot of these things are based on urine from other predators that are basically the enemies of the predators you're trying to keep out. The marten was, you know, is a mammal that is a pretty fierce little mammal, and there's some other animals that are like that. That their scented urine just keeps keeps other animals at bay, and it's a strong signal. So they synthesize that. So you can purchase stuff that will be a deterrent in that fashion. And there's also a lot of stuff that can be homemade to replicate that or other, just other scents that animals don't like. And, it doesn't take a few minutes on the internet to poke around and, come up with some homemade formulas for keeping things away that you might be able to either set spray on or sprinkle on around places you're trying to protect. So that's, that doesn't have all the responsibility of the dog ship, but it may not be as effective, but it certainly is worth a try. What I would warn against is things like poisons, which other animals who you don't want to hurt can get hold of. Kids, even, children, pets, other dogs, neighbors' dogs. I mean, you just don't want to kill everything inside. So a kind of a poison that might be sprinkled around may not be. You probably don't have enough control over who's going to get to that to responsibly, put that out. So, I would leave that, leave that alone myself. I mean, again, just a conversation with somebody who may be professional in the area might be helpful. One of the things that people don't realize when they might put poison bait, like rat poison or some kind of strychnine-based poison in their crawl space or something to get rid of a critter that's in there, what happens is a lot of that stuff is designed to, once they eat it, it drives the animal outside the structures because it makes them thirsty. And so the animal goes outside the structure, dies from the poison, and then is lying there. Now your dog or your cat or your whatever could get a hold of that carcass and eat it and kill themselves as well. So that's, that's one of the things, one of the reasons we don't really want to encourage poisons and baits like that for this purpose. But, trapping is a big deal. There's a lot of options there, and it's sort of a squishy area because there's a lot of rules and regulations. But that's a way that a lot of people would take care of the problems with snares or crate traps. Take care of the animal. The funny thing is, like with beavers, if you tear down the dam, all that does is force them to. They think it hasn't been strong enough.
Yeah.
It cut more trees down they rebuild it with more trees they cut down, they chew down. So, that's not the option. I mean, that's what I said earlier in the show. By learning the creature's habits, you'll have a much better handle on how to deal with it. So, that's pretty much all I've got here. Any of these things can be anywhere from a nuisance to a real problem. So, I would recommend going to the state game department or the equivalent and just doing a little bit of research before you take any drastic action, because you may find that you may find there's actual free service. I mean, they may have something that just a control officer may just come out and be able to take care of it for you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay anything. So, that's always a pleasant thought to think your tax money is being applied, correctly.
Absolutely, and get that taken care of so you don't have to, take it out of your wallet, which may be already be taken out of your wallet, like you said, with your taxes. They may offer that service or offer some suggestions as well. So that's great ideas, great tips about, again, removing them. It could be more inhumane than just eliminating them in some ways with putting them out there. A lot of people don't think about that. Now they have no home, no predators, they don't know where they're at, things like that. Versus eliminating those. And of course there's companies that will do both ways that are experts in that wildlife removal. You see them occasionally driving around with the signs plastered all over the trucks, and of course the your local government as well. And it was mentioned in the chat room as well about, eliminating them yourself. It was mentioned in the chat room several times about different types of rounds, 410, 12-gauge, 20-gauge, even a 22 with shot shell, and how if you have chickens and some of that lead shot shell or steel shot shell or whatever happens to land ricochet in that the free-range area of your chickens or in the chicken pen, since the show is also about chickens, that they may, you may have that risk of them picking up that shot shell as they're scratching around and digesting and eating that either steel or even worse, that lead shot shell. So that was mentioned in the chat room while we were talking about that as well today. Richard, if you plan on trying to eliminate it yourself with whatever round or weapon you may have at the house, to just be real careful maybe which the directions you shoot or where you choose to shoot that animal, if that's one of your solutions. So we wanted to mention that as well. Something to think about that we may not always think about. So it's what the show's all about. Get us thinking and help us have different ways to solve these problems. So Richard, thank you very much for coming on the show today. Great topic, great show, first show of 2013. We look forward to having you. Let me look at the calendar here. I think the 24th of January, two Thursdays, 2 weeks from today will be the 24th, and we'll return on that day. And folks, I know you love to hear Richard when he's on talking about, again, just about everything related to homesteading and sustainable lifestyle. And when you love him when he's on the show, you'll love his publication, Back Home Magazine, and you can see all about it at Back Home Magazine. And while you're here, Richard, I'll just go ahead and share. I haven't made this announcement yet. We won't be doing it today. We may do some on our Facebook page. We may do some here on the radio show. But I'm thinking probably maybe every month, maybe every other month, maybe twice this month and not next month, but maybe it may end up being about once a month. We're going to be giving away a subscription to Back Home Magazine to one of our listeners, our fans. So sometimes we may have a contest on Facebook for folks that can't listen to the show because they're out there making a living, teaching our kids, working, doctors, farmers, whatever. They may listen to the archive, and of course can't win listen to the archive because of our live contest. So we'll have some on Facebook, and we'll have some on the radio show where we'll be giving away a year subscription to Back Home Magazine to some listeners. And so you'll have to stay tuned for that. We'll be starting that maybe the next time you're on, Richard. We may actually give away our first subscription to your magazine. Again, that's backhomemagazine.com. You can order online. You can also give them a call. You have someone who you'll be able to understand right there in North Carolina, the foothills of Appalachia, will answer your phone call and take your order. And then you can every other month get a magazine delivered to your mailbox with examples of all this great information we hear on the radio show. So, Richard, thank you very much for coming on today, and we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll see you on the 24th, and have a good space in between.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alrighty, great show. Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, backhomemagazine.com. Thank you for joining us today, listening live, or if you're listening to the archive 24/7, we appreciate you. And as we wrap up the show, as always, I want to send a shout-out to all the homeschoolers that listen to the show. Hope you're getting geared up for 2013. I know you're back in classes now, so thank you for incorporating this radio show as a part of your curriculum. I want to say a big thank you to all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show. Keep the rubber on the road and keep it safe. We appreciate all you do, making us have all the supplies we need here in America. I want to say a big thank you to all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live every day, Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, a big thanks to you, our listeners, both live and to the archive listeners, for listening to the show. You make this show possible, yep, because without you, the listener, we wouldn't have sponsors. Without sponsors, we wouldn't have the show. So thank you very much, listeners, both archive and live listeners, all of our chat room chickeneers. And we hope you can tune in tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Fun Friday. Our first Fun Friday episode of the year, 2013. We'll have a great time tomorrow. We'll be giving away tons of cool prizes. And tonight I'll be picking out some trivia and trivia questions for tomorrow's show. So tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for our first Fun Friday episode of the year. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.